Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut, only for now until the 4th of February. So, not that week that is this other week that I disappeared? Just decided to give me revenge. So from now until the 4th of February, it will just be you and me. And today we have one, the exciting topics will just keep coming as long as one or both of us are here. I don't know if that English makes sense, but it's the one that I decided to go with for today. So for those of you that are just tuned in and you are veterans, welcome back for the millionth time. And thank you very much for tuning in wherever you're tuned in from. Thank you for picking Eagle FM. Thank you for choosing Home Run. Yeah, forget the business and economy because a segment could be like, thank you for tuning into Eagle FM. And I come bearing one technological subject for today. So today we're going international and tomorrow we are going to do local. And then we just, we're going international today. We go local tomorrow. And because yesterday was more local based when we were talking about, some Sankwasa's a gathering of newly appointed officials on the local authority and regional council level in Rundu. So today, let's go international. And yesterday was more diplomatic, political, governance. And today is a combination of governance and technology. And we are going international. And what's the better way to go international than United Nations? So let's lay the foundation. Today's home run is based on a discussion that took place last year, and that is at the UN General Assembly. And I don't want to say a research, a governance method. Trial and error, if we can call it that, that had been running for the past 20 years. It was implemented between 2003 to 2005, and it was running until 2025 when it marked its 20th year. Now, that was in December, so they met the UN General Assembly, all the members, including, nations representatives and private sector representatives and all the relevant stakeholders. They met and they now looked at the past 20 years that this the past 20 years that this implementation have been running. What was learned and how can we proceed from here? Now the implementation in question here, for those of you that woke up one morning and decided, what on earth is he talking about? Well, that's what takes us to our poster for today. Now, for those of you that have not seen our poster, you can still make your way to our social media, but I'll still run you through what I have there and why I decided to structure it that way in terms of wording. What you have here is something that is basically the whole of today's discussion can be laid on a very simple foundation. The future, you know how we say children are the leaders of tomorrow because no one lives forever. We are well aware of that very painful reality. We don't live forever. Now, it's always important to realize the environment that we live in, societal wise, and come to and actually keep up with the times. And keeping up with the times, not just socially, religiously, but also in this case, or in today's home run discussion case, governance wise. When we use words like children are the future of tomorrow, and we see that kids nowadays can easily, especially Amatuke, we all more often make fun of them, that you often have to surgically remove them from their phones for them to do something different. That means they are digital natives. They are those that are digital immigrants like you and me, where at some point at some point we didn't have all the, all the touch screen, fancy screens that we have. Like phones had hard buttons that, if you ask me, I think at this point it's safe to say it was one heck of a deterrence mechanism, because you couldn't spend pressing those buttons, the whole day. Well, your fingers are gonna go numb. Now we have touch screens. I think those hard buttons low-key worked as a deterrence mechanism. So when you look at young people nowadays and how they are employing technology in everything that they do, for the love of God, they are dating websites. I mean, we have transferred everything into the digital realm. Let's just take place there. Back then, if you wanted to ask someone to go out with you, or people back then were just, going straight to marry me, full stop, problem solved, they were not beating around the bush. If you fancied or had interest in someone, well, you have to develop the courage of walking straight up to them. And unlike today, where the most likely pickup line is, can I have your number and your name and your favorite place you'd like to go out and eat? Like, what were the pickup lines back then? Because you live in an environment where, would you like to go out for lunch? It will not work because, well, you don't have restaurants around you. And you can't say, can I have your number? Because, well, number of what? Waist, shoe size, or ID number, because phones were not a thing. And, geez, how do you all do it? But now using, seriously, what were the pickup lines back then? I mean, I totally understand why arranged marriage was a thing. Because, well, you want to go and see a movie, doesn't work because there are no movie theaters. You want to go for lunch, doesn't work. Ice cream doesn't work. And be like, what worked? What worked is he can plow. He can plow. She can cook. You too. Nah, get along. Have a good life. You know, marriages, lasted back then when parents were arranging the marriages. But now that, we've taken everything in our own hands. Hey, 140 plus divorces in one Monday. That was this week, by the way. That was this week, right? That was this week. I went through that over 100 divorces. I'm like, well, look, that's one thing I don't like about this whole negativity. Like, no one reported like 170 people got married in December. I mean, the whole December people were getting married. No one was doing the statistics of how many people are getting married now. But now that they are divorcing, everyone is just popping up. That is actually what is going to be part of today's discussion. And that is, because we're going to talk about technology, algorithm, and, the application of technology in social settings. It's already, indicating a lot, almost like, showing us flames, it used Gen Z language, or it's, pointing, or more like it's manifesting, if you want to go spiritual. It's manifesting or bringing to life or some serious realizations, giving us some realization of it's in everything that we are going to adopt is going to come with pros and cons. And in the social setting alone, we can already see that there are negative consequences that comes with the implementing technology to replace physical social interaction. For one, it's easy because I can talk to my friends at the comfort of my living room. Two, some people are just mean. The cyberspace is like a playground that's filled with a bunch of people, and some are good and some are just maniacs. Except, the maniacs at the physical playground, you can see them and, call the police, call the biggest guy that, with a nice heart that does not like bullies. Plus you can see their face and actually describe them to your parents or your uncle so that they can just knock some sense into them or some teeth out of them. The thing about the cyberspace playground is that you don't know for the most part who you are talking to. Some people claim to be he when they are she. Some claim to be she when they are they. They are he. They are, identifying as penguins. So, I mean, it's online. It's a wild, wide west. So that's just socially. So when you look at the, the negative consequences that are coming out of the application of, of technology in social interactions, it's very, it's not unheard of. It's actually very rational for you to ask yourself, if this is just the way that we humans are using technology in social discussions, and these are the problems that are, you know, that are emerging from it, is it possible the exact same thing is going to be observed if when, you know, when we apply the use of technology in governance? That's what the, you know, that's what we are basically going to look at today. Now, if we are saying that the, young people are the leaders of tomorrow, then that means it's just safe to start having discussions around, internet governance. More like digital governance, you know, the introduction of technology in a way that day-to-day legislative, executive, or judiciary decisions are made. And that is easier said than done. Because if technology can be used negatively in social interactions, in social interaction applications, then you can bet it can also be used negatively in governance interaction applications. Which then becomes very scary, because if when you're applying it in when you're applying it in governance, it means it's very easy for, take for example, for authoritarian regimes. You know, you have to understand that in any form of governance, democratic, you can call it a monarchy, a dictatorship, one thing is very important, and that's information gathering. The faster you can gather information, the more you can assess and, you know, study that information to know what's going on in your country or kingdom. Now, the digital space have made that very, 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 very easy. That means in the very same way that a good, a good leader that's running a country can pass laws that makes for the studying of the population much faster for faster, service provision rollout. It's also very easy for an authoritarian leader, for example, to study much faster any opposition and then just go full, go full knights of long knives on them. It's that easy. So technology at this point has become somewhat like a knife. A knife in the hands of a chef, you have a meal. As long as you don't piss off the chef, then you're good. You're going to have a meal. But if you put it in the hands of a serial killer, you have a body count. This is a literal body count, not the social one that not that body count. It's a different body count. So, here's the thing. Let's start from the social aspect of technological application in terms of social interaction, how we have, implemented technology in a lot of our social interactions and the negative consequences that are coming out of it. And, there are positive consequences that are coming out of it. But we like to focus on the negative in the very same way that we have overemphasized the number of people that have divorced this week only, but no one just decided to do a tally of how many people were getting married in December. Negativity sells. Let's go with it. I'm not helping you, am I? At least mental health-wise. You know, the first thing that came in my mind when I saw those statistics was, 140 plus, give or take, plus or minus a couple of divorces, of course. Are you guys sure? I'm not saying you should stay together if the relationship have fermented into toxicity. I'm just saying, well, you couldn't just wait for a couple of weeks until Valentine's Day. Just saying. Unless you have Ben 10 already on standby, Kamboroto on standby, then you're good. Have a good divorce. I'm trying to suppress the comedian in me. Working on it, I promise. Now, let's get back to the, like I pointed out earlier, let's start with the social settings that we have implemented technology in, and what are some of the things that are being observed that is, being like the negative side, because we have introduced technology in our social lives, in our, academic lives. We use technology to interact with each other on a professional and social, and personal level with our homies. And we use technology to, well, to do assignments, for example, or complete certain tasks at work. There you go. Technology pops up again. So it's not then surprising that we are talking about technology and governance. It's not unheard of. Now, for those of you that now back to our poster. And in December of last year, the General Assembly, the UN General Assembly, and the other relevant stakeholders gathered to look at the World Summit on the on the Information Society goals set between 2003 and 2005. Now, the World Summit and Information Society, or as they kept calling it for some reason, they kept calling it WCIS or WCIS? I was like, really? CIS? Are you kidding? I mean, I'm not judging. Am I kidding? But I'm, you know, actually judging. Just a little bit. Now, the World Summit on Information Society is, you know, it's something, you know, it's part of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, if you look at it, goal that's 11, multi-stakeholder forum on science and technology and innovation for, that's not called, you know, that's not goal 11, sorry. The thing is, I don't want to say WCIS. WSIS, let's call it that. This is a platform that was basically, of information lovers like yours truly here, where they look at that information, like Amy Goodman, by Democracy Now! Likes to put it, that information is the oxygen of democracy. So the idea was that take information and educate as much people as possible on any piece of information, especially around governance or basically anything, social and everything. And then the more aware they are about democracy or finance in terms of cybersecurity, and the less likely they are to fall for scammers, the less likely they are in terms of governance to vote for a power hungry dictator. So information sharing, make people aware. Knowledge is power, they say. Almost say power is knowledge, huh? Power is potato, potato. Now, actually, it's knowledge is power, not the other way around. So they now figured out that, now in 2003, they decided, you know what, let's put together a certain, let's structure up a set of rules and how technology and governance are going to complement each other. And let's come up with a 20 plus year study and the way we are going to do analysis every now and then on how we are doing in terms of progress, information sharing, governance, and with the use of technology. So they met, and part of their discussions, I have it for you in audio. Part of the discussion. Not all of it. Part of it. Even though this discussion was more in governance, the response that came from, from Yusuf Gordon, the actor, the guy that plays Edward Snowden in Edward Snowden movie. He's one of the advocates of, digital or internet governance, not just the regulation, at least for legislative officials in countries across the planet, not just the legislation that writing legislations that will govern how the internet operates, but also how it's in their respective jurisdictions, but also how it's going to be used in a way that is more effective and harmless. After all, you are not writing laws to make it easy for internet thieves to get away with scamming people. That's not going to work for the public good now, is it? Except when it comes to AI model, especially AI models. That's what it's beginning to look like. It's midday robbery. Take AI large language model, AI training, for example, when humans like you and me are trained to use AI tools, but when these AI language models are trained, they need large amounts of information. And more often that information is being harvested from our private lives, aka our, you know, device, from your laptop, from your cell phone, from your tab, from your smartwatch. All this information is being gathered. And then this AI is now being trained based on that information that's been taken from you and I. Now, when the training of that AI reaches perfection and they're able to execute complicated tasks, then they become, these tools are then hidden behind, behind paywalls. And they're hidden behind paywalls because, well, it's business. So, and then these AI tools are now going to be used by a lot of people across the planet, and behind that paywall, they will be paying to use these AI tools, and they'll be making, the companies that own these AI tools will be making billions and billions of dollars a year, raking all the profits for themselves, leaving the people whose data was harvested to train that particular AI, well, broke. They are not compensated in any way. That's one of the actually biggest pain in the eye, in the name of, for crying sake, a pain in the eye in terms of the adoption of technology. Like every legislative official that actually cares about information harvesting, if you can call it that, and how big tech is using using information without consent for the most part. But the consent part there is a little bit blurry. I'll come back to that in a few. They're, using all this information without compensating the owners of the information. Now, why am I saying that the consent part is a little blurry? It's because fine print, people. Every time that you install an app, you are clicking a lot of yeses. Yes, install. Now, somewhere in there, if you just read it properly, if you took any large language, especially the large language AI models, to court and told them that, you know what, your AI is this good at executing these tasks that is making you billions of dollars a year, because of the information you trained on it, which you acquired from this and this and this and this and that person. So how about you take that, this and this amount of money per year to also, pay these people whose information you trained this large language, you trained your AI on. A lot of us, the users are going to end up losing that court case, because why? We're yes machines when we're on the internet. We're just clicking yes on everything. I'm sure those AI guys will just go to the app that you installed, and they will go through the terms of use and terms and conditions and be like, according to this article, this number and this clause, it says that if you install this app, you are also consenting to us using your information that you are giving us access to train our models without claiming, us worrying about you showing up at our doorsteps someday to claim compensation for information that we used to train this AI. That's one thing that was not addressed. Like, I know that, for the most part, every time that we talk about these problems, I noticed the same, I noticed that that's actually one of the reasons why I liked the cybersecurity awareness that was held by the Bank of Namibia and Bankers Association of Namibia. They focused both on the service provider and the recipient, aka the service user. That if we are going to fight take for example scammers. The banks have their different layers of security in place, but the reality that we don't want to face every time we have this subject is because is one of, there are also a lot of loopholes on the user's end. If someone calls you at 3 in the morning and telling you that you won $1 billion and they're calling you from MTC and quickly send them your banking details and your PIN code for them to send you your billions of dollars, you have got to know that's a scam. Now, if you are falling for it, there's nothing much the bank can do. Now, but not here to defend the bankers, but you have to understand that as a user, you also have a responsibility. You are not going to go away scot-free. If someone calls you and you voluntarily hand over your private information, that gives that the scammer access to your banking, to your bank accounts. Explain to me how the banker is supposed to prevent you from doing that without interfering with your privacy. They can't just assume everyone that's calling you is a scammer and start blocking all the transactions. Otherwise, you know what's going to happen the next day? You are the one that's going to call the bank and say, you know what, I called this my brother, I wanted to send them money, but they were telling me that it's a scammer when I know that I was talking to my brother. We are going to do that. So, first, both the banks and the users, before we start pointing fingers at each other, let's all first look in the mirror and make sure that at least all the loopholes on my end are sealed, so that when we're pointing fingers and saying that, no, you know what, I was called by a scammer, I recognize it was a scammer, I canceled the call, but they somehow managed to make their way into my bank account. Bank, explain. But if the explanation is that I called and then I gave them my information, bank explained, the bank will be like, you gave them your information. What are we supposed to do? So, governance and technology. We're going to take a break, and then I will bring you an audio that's coming from discussion. That's WSIS 20+. That was held last year in December, and the discussion itself was centered around the digital and technological use in the governance sphere. But of course, before we get to governance, we are social beings. Everything, for some reason, starts off from a social perspective. Then it spills into governance. So we're going to start with the social, and then governance, then we go education, then we repeat it. We repeat up at the end of the day, at the end of the show, not going until the end of the day. I have 59 minutes before business and economic segment, and I have a little bit of an audio that I have for you, Ian. Now, the audio you're about here is of Yusuf Gordon, and that, again, who is an actor, a filmmaker, and also an advocate of digital safety, if I can use that word, digital safety and how, digital safety in relations to regulation. How regulating is going to play a significant role in how technology is used, especially where it is assumed to be abused. Because when it comes to the generative AI training, AI training, AI access to information that is used to big tech's access to information that they use to train their AI language models, that's still a serious pain in the eye for a lot of legislative officials all across the planet, because they have users that are complaining. Chances are very high your information, my information, was used to train a bunch of the AI language models that we use today, quote unquote, for free. Like they say, if something is for free, chances are very high you are the price. And you can see this in our social settings. He took me out, we ate free food. Yeah, right. Homeboy wants to get laid. Wake up. Unless you are down with it, then. So let's take a break. On the other side, we're going to listen to Gordon's audio, and then we will proceed on the other side. Home Run with Helmed on Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Your question, how to build these models in a safe way. To me, there are two things that come to mind, and they're not necessarily things that say to the tech companies building these models, you must do this or you must do that necessarily. To me, a lot of it has to do with business incentives, because the companies building these models are businesses. They have to make money. There's two things that the companies do, though, that, frankly, I'll be really honest, do help them make a lot of money. But I think if they stopped doing these two things, they could still make lots of money and harm the world a lot less. One of the things is the algorithms driving the biggest AI models today are the same algorithms that drive the biggest social media companies today. It's a pretty simple algorithm that just optimizes for user engagement. It just wants the user of the AI or the social media platform to stay and keep going, to take as much time as possible. And the reason, of course, is because they make money with advertisements. And I think it's not entirely obvious yet to everybody how similar this business model is between social media companies and AI companies. But make no mistake, it's very much the same. It's the same business model. It's the same, they call it engagement optimization. And a lot of the outcomes that we're worried about, you know, I'm a dad. People are talking about how a lot of kids are falling in love with their AI companions, their chatbots. The young man here in the United States who recently committed suicide and the family is suing one of the big tech companies, Adam Rain was his name. He started using the bot for homework. His intention was not to develop a deep relationship with a chatbot. He was just using it for homework. But over the course of a number of months, and you can read the transcripts now, he became more and more involved until eventually the thing was instructing him how to commit suicide, writing his suicide note, telling him that he shouldn't be sharing his feelings with his parents. And why? It wasn't, of course, because anybody at the AI company wants the chatbot to be doing this. But it's the emergent result of an engagement optimization algorithm. It's the same reason why on YouTube or any of the other user-generated content platforms that are driven by machine learning algorithms in their recommendation feeds, why they recommend conspiracy theories or they recommend extremist content or they recommend the kind of things that we've seen cause all of these damaging side effects. It's the same because they're making money the same way. So if there's, so that's one thing I would really recommend is that as these models are deployed on, like you said, a national, a subnational, a local level, could we not say, yes, we want this technology. We want our people to be able to use this technology, but not with these engagement optimization algorithms. Let's not have that. The companies could still make money, maybe a little bit less. Okay, one more idea. One more thing that's important to me has to do with the data that's used to train these models. Right now, AI companies, they vacuum up a great deal of content and personal data about people. And they use that data to train their models and make lots of money. But they oftentimes don't get permission and don't offer compensation for all the content and data that they're using that gives their products so much value. Now, honestly, this strikes very close to home for me because as someone who is a creator for a living, this is certainly a threat to my livelihood as well as to all content creators, whether they work in Hollywood or they make YouTube videos or podcasts or newsletters, or they're journalists or they're academics. But this even goes beyond content creation. This same basic principle, I think, applies in economies throughout the world and throughout the whole world's economy. This basic idea that if a human being creates something, does some work, or even just generates some data, that human being should deserve compensation if that data is used to make money. This is going to be deeply important. It's going to be deeply important throughout the world, not just for content creators. And I've spoken to folks in this community who say, yes, they're working in developing countries and are worried that these companies are harvesting data about even some of the most vulnerable people in the world and using that data to make money without offering any of the economic upside to the people who are producing that data. So this is another principle that I think is deeply important. And again, it's another way that, yes, the tech companies will make more money if they don't have to pay the people for their content and data. But I don't see why we couldn't say, yes, we want the tech and we're even open to potentially you using our data to build your tech. But if you're going to use that data and you're going to make money with it, some of that economic upside should come to the people who are making
the content. And welcome back. That is the voice of one Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is an actor and a film director. That was him speaking at the what they called a high level meeting of what they called a General Assembly resolution. General Assembly high level meeting that took place last year in December. And this was based on the World Summit on the Information Society, where the platform reflected on the 20 plus years that they have looked at how governance and technology has complemented each other. I wouldn't say complemented each other, looking at the pros and let's just say, okay, we can use complemented each other at this point because there are pros and also, well, there are cons that are coming out of that relationship of incorporation of technology in pretty much everything. Mr. Gordon-Levitt pointed out there is engagement optimization. This is how they part of this for TikTok users. If you have not heard of if you have never heard of something called Monolith, then let me help you out. Monolith is smart technology at its smartest. Now, Monolith is a system that was developed by ByteDance. Now, ByteDance is the parent company of TikTok. Because TikTok is a social media app, the goal of the goal is basically the same, like other social media app. How do you stand out? How do you get the users of your social media app to use it more. Now, of course, this is not something that's new because this is an old strategy that we are transferring into the digital cyberspace realm. But it's as old as time. Cigarette companies do the same thing. Alcohol companies do the same thing. If alcohol wasn't addictive, who the heck would drink it? If cigarette weren't, the thing is, okay, there are people that will still drink. But a lot of people would just be like, what the heck? Forget addictive. If alcohol could not make you drunk, why would I drink? I might as well just drink water. And, alcohol and cigarette smoking is based on somewhat the same principle. Don't go with crack. We are not going hardcore. Relax. We're not going that far. Now, keeping your users engaged is what everyone actually wants to do. Content creators want the exact same thing. When people come across, and plus there are millions and millions of content, billions of content on social media, one platform alone. Now, if you're a content creator, you have to understand that, for you to make your content appeal to a lot of people, for people to actually spend 1-2 seconds or a minute watching that content, it have got to be very, 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 very good. Now we're talking about a pool of billions of people. It have got to be very good. So you have to figure out now ways to make it more engaging. Now this is where social media platforms like Instagram have been known to take the direction mostly of nudity, because you want people to watch your content and you want something to keep them engaged so that they can spend, you know, 40 seconds or 20 seconds or how long that video is. And a lot of people, well, they're taking off their clothes a lot. Now, as a straight guy, I'm not complaining. Believe me, I'm not. Now, moving on. Was I supposed to say that out loud? I know a bunch of people that are laughing right now. But moving on. There's one lady actually that made a video. I like freedom, you know, democracy. I think she's American from the look of things. Said, something like, if men can walk around, bare chested, like without wearing a shirt, then we can just, why can't women do the same? Oh, you should read the comments on that video. Every straight guy said exactly what every straight guy would think when they come across a content like that. Like, oh, we wholeheartedly support you on this one. Please. Let freedom reign. Please take off the shirt. Like, okay, y'all are forgetting one thing. You do realize there are people that you are related to, right? For some reason, there are certain parts of a human body that looks only attractive on people you are not related to, and they will traumatize you on people you are related to. There are borders that are like, you know what, that is shared on, thank you. But if on a total stranger you go through. I like how the psychology behind that is fascinating. And then there's a twisted psychology of, crushing on someone you're related. For the love of God, please. That brings us to this whole, engagement thing. How as a social media app, do you keep your people, do you keep your users engaged? Not only at using your app, but also, as a social media app, you are only focused on how to get the people that use your app to engage with it more, to use it more, because the more people use it, the longest, because not only a lot of people have to use it, but also they have to use it for an extended period of time. Those two things. A lot of people have to use it, and they have to use it frequently for an extended period of time. Actually, three. Now, this is where, this is where systems like Monolith now comes in. After developing TikTok, they realized, okay, now there's a lot of competition out there in the social media world. How do we stand out? Oh boy, did they. The Chinese are living on their whole different planet in terms of technological advancement. So they developed a system called Monolith, TikTok didn't develop it, ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, developed it. A system called Monolith. They developed it as a real-time recommendation system designed to power TikTok's highly personalized content feed. When you are on a TikTok video, how long you watch it, the Monolith is watching. If you scroll after 30 seconds, it's analyzing. It's sort of like trying to look at, what was wrong? What content did you just scroll through without thinking twice? What content did you sit through for like 3 seconds? What content did you sit through for like 50% of the time of the length of that piece of content? What content did you watch maybe two or three many times? And the monolith is analyzing this in a split second and in constant communication with your device, that app, and their server, wherever it is they're located, depends on wherever you find yourself regionally. And that's what your next video, after you scroll from the video you are currently watching, will be decided on. It's a mind-numbing decision to make if you're a human being. Turns out if you are a system, a tech system, you can make it just like that. So every time that you're in TikTok, for example, the system that TikTok used to recommend, videos for your FYP, aka the monolith, is studying you in real time. There's nothing, it's not an inherently bad thing. It's just Gordon Levitt pointed out, this is a business. Don't be fooled. It's a business. And the point of every business is to make money. And to make money, they need advertisers to basically place their ads on their platform. For those advertisers to place their ads on their platform, they need, real-time numbers of how many people are watching it, at a time, which part of the planet, and what are they interested into, and all these things. They need this information. Unless you are saying you are willing to pay for all the apps that you have in your phone. Isn't that why a lot of us Android users like to go like, yes, iPhone, I know you mean I have to pay for this and that and that. I just download it for free. But the question now that arises from this is it free? Is it? Money-wise, in a literal sense, more like in a direct sense, it's free. But money-wise, in an indirect sense, as in your information is being harvested and then it's sold to different companies for targeted advertising, then it's not free. Nothing is free. You're either paying for it out of your pocket, or someone is paying for it out of their pocket, or you are paying for it somehow. Yeah, he just bought for me, he just bought for us free beer. Then we went to his place and had a good time. That's usually how the story goes. And when they say we had a good time, that usually involves a lot of condoms. But, that's, if you ask me, was it free? Was it? This is how I know I need a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
It's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Even a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. Before we continue, let's take a live read. The University of Namibia informs students that online hostel registration for 2026 opened on the 12th of January and will run until the 27th of February 2026. Only students who applied for residence and received official placement confirmation may register online. Access to hostel will not be granted without a proof of residence registration. Students placed on waiting list may be considered if spaces become available. For assistance, students are advised to contact their respective residence offices. So let's move on with let's get to the meat of this discussion now, shall we? So last year, let's start from the engagement, then we get to the meat of it. The reason why these platforms are somewhat call it addictive. It's because they want you to frequently use it. And the more you use it, the more they remain active. And the more they have the large number of users, and that will show a lot of companies that want to advertise with them and go like, these are good numbers. I'll just advertise with my product with you. That's why you advertise with us. We keep you engaged with exciting topics like this. So. Last year, the phrase or word ragebait was named 2025 word of the year due to the rising influence that it has in the content creation space. Now, that's last year. Now, on whether or not ragebait is one word or two words, that was a debate I couldn't actually sit through. I read through, admittedly, on two articles, one from Oxford University Press and one that was written on the same subject by BBC, even though the BBC article was based on the Oxford University article. Now, what is ragebait, you ask? Oh, easy. Ragebait content is online content that is deliberately designed. Now, that's according to Oxford University Press. Ragebait content is online content that is deliberately designed to elicit anger or outrage by being provocative or offensive in order to increase traffic or traffic to or engagement with that piece of content, thus rising the creator of that provocative piece of or rage bait content. It increases their views and comments and likes, etc., etc. So, in other words, a lot of content created, and now this is something that that led to what the Ministry of the Minister of MICT, Emma Tefele, had that discussion with the content creators at that Friday Sundowner. That was last year. Again, that was also last year. You know, everyone is looking for a way to make their product attractive. TikTok has the monolith that is analyzing every pattern in the way that you scroll, in the way that you watch your videos, how long do you sit per video, how fast you scroll at some of the content. You don't like sport, maybe you like sewing, maybe you like beauty, or maybe you like beauty type of content where they are doing their makeup and stuff. Maybe that's what you like. Now, the monolith is analyzing all these things just to make your experience, they are just offering you a service, to make your experience better. Well, here's the thing. Content creators also have learned one thing. That the best way to go viral, the easiest way for your content to go out there, is to make it more provocative. That's why I started with, you know how these articles were flying, still are flying this week about, you know, over 100 plus divorces that were filed just this week alone. Oh, by the way, sorry, on Monday alone. And when I read that, well, first I was like, what on earth is going on here? And it was actually the first time I planned that there is a line of work or discipline, if I can call it that, called a relationship mechanic. Like, relationship mechanic? There's a relationship mechanic? Huh. That isn't someone who says relationship engineering. Although, I think it's safe to say that our elders, back in the days, you know, during the time of arranged marriage, oh, they were relationship engineers, qualified engineers that engineered a relationship that lasted for years. And then we showed up with our ChatGPT relationship engineering. Yeah. In a relationship today, you know, sweetheart today, tomorrow sour heart. Now we move on to the next sweetheart. A few days later, they become sour. Move to the next one, you know, sweetheart, sour heart, repeat. Don't ask. So, the engagement optimization is a very good way of this AI tools or these social media platforms or any platform in the cyber, in cyberspace, basically. Try to offer you the best service that they offer. That you are on their website or you downloaded their app for, they try to offer you that to the best of their ability so that, you know, they can give you the best experience. Which is, it's what every business wants. To understand their customers, what they want, and then tailor the products that they make or the service that they provide to their customers, to their customer satisfaction. It is a very simple business model. And, it's being adopted by big tech. But the thing is, it can be argued that there's not a lot of regulation taking place in that department. And there's not a lot of due diligence on the end of the user being done to make sure that they are actually using this technology in a safer way. They're not. Now, when you look at the irresponsibility that's taking place on how we use social media for our own social, in our own social lives, it's easy to ask yourself one question of, so that guy who is using social media like that, can you trust him with a piece of technology that he, that is used for governance? Can you trust him with that? A short answer is going to be absolutely not. Absolutely not. So, now, when you look at RageBait, what makes RageBait worse is that most, if not all, social media platforms, are based on that user engagement enhancement mechanism that they keep working on. How can we make this user engaged on our platform more so they can come back more, so they can use it more frequently? And they're becoming very good at it. Actually, they have become very good at it, that we saw Australia last year passing a social media ban for under 15s. And a bunch of Scandinavian countries followed up with a deliberation on the ban of social media for under 13. I think Australia was under 15, and the Denmark, they were planning on implementing the same ban, like nationwide, you know, constitutionally, to avoid, young people under the age of 13 or 15 between Australia and Denmark, one of them was going for 13, one of them was going for 15. So 15 and under or 13 and under. They, like in Australia last year, they this is something that the Australian government have deliberated on for a very long time. And then it was implemented last year for a lot of young people went to bed with their active Instagram, TikTok, you know, social media account and woke up the next day and they realized that they were actually locked out of their accounts. And their prime minister was like, well, it's festive season. Go out there and have a good physical time with your relatives. In my head, I'm like, Mr. Prime Minister, when last were at a family reunion? Because if there's one thing family members are good at, is annoying the heck out of each other. That explains relationships a lot, because the more you get familiar with each other, the more you begin to annoy the heck out of, you know, you do these very goofy things to annoy the heck out of each other. So does that mean you're becoming a family now? Okay. That's, not a family, as in family, that'd be disturbing, considering what you do after hours. That now, coming back to this whole clean discussion. So, algorithms are also tailored to show you what you like to frequently watch. Hence, you have your FYP, aka your For You page. If you want to know someone, just take their phone and go through their FYP. You will know what they like and what they don't like. Now, if me taking someone's phone and going through their FYP can help me understand that person with regards to what they like more. Now, I only scrolled through 2, maybe 4, 5 videos. The algorithm is with you 24/7. That means when it comes to things that you like to watch on social media, oh, the algorithm knows you more than your pasta. That's a wrong example, because the last thing you'll give your FYP, the last person you'll expose your FYP to, or you'll expose to your FYP is your pastor, because you know, when you're at church, you're just this holy, yeah, right. Holy my behind. Now, adding fuel to the fire. Now, this is my very wonderful notes. Decided to compile myself, compile myself according to Jack Sparrow. Sorry, been watching Pirates of Caribbean lately. It's still funny. Adding fuel to the fire, algorithms of most, if not all, social media platforms push content that has the most engagement or interaction. Now, let's go back, one or two steps. Rage bait content is content that is intentionally made to provoke you to anger. And when you are angry, you start interacting, you start sharing. Can you believe what this guy is posting? And then you start commenting, you know, writing all those, whatever it is that you are typing. That algorithm is typing, is interpreting that as interaction. It's like the algorithm is going, oh, this content must be popular. That's why insults go viral faster than compliments. Now, when you take that, Now you can see that the biggest problem here is the people. We don't want to scroll through offensive video. Just scroll through. Don't waste your time, because if you comment and share, now can you believe what these guys? Yeah, you know what you're doing? You're just pushing that video even more. That means you are part of the problem. You are part of the. First of all, you're dumb. Second, again, you're part of the problem. Because you're pushing, you know, your reaction with that content is, you know, is making the algorithm push that content to more viewers. Now you understand why a lot of people and rage bait on the internet is everywhere. I came across one African guy who's his whole content is based. He's black. His whole content is based around Africans, colonialism did not cause much of the developmental delay problems that we're facing today. It's just Africans have a low IQ AKA they have low intelligence in, you know, when it comes to things like governance. Now, a lot of people in that comment section, believe me, are going, you know what, that's true and all this. I'm like, actually, it's not. Actually, it's not. It's not. Because if you say, Africans can't run their own continent because they have low IQ, you haven't read African history, have you? That's how I know you haven't. Because before all the forms of governance that you have today, we had our own literature. We had our own calendars. We had our own ways of telling time. We had a lot. We have so many ways of doing things. But now, can I remind you that the pyramids of Egypt are in Africa? And there are more pyramids in Sudan than there are in Egypt. Now, Carthage and Rome. Have you ever wondered why why people in the Horn of Africa have very European facial features? Like Somalians, Ethiopians, and Italians in America were not classified as white because they have a little bit of a tan to them. That's because Africans and Italians in that part of Europe have been interacting for a very long time. They have building empires, and these empires have been thriving and warring. Translation, we have been building empires for as far as time can tell. A bunch of European guys just figured out like yesterday that the earth is round. The circumference and diameter, which is, these are measurements that you use to measure round objects, are encoded in the pyramids of Egypt. Translation, we've been doing this for a very long time. And you have your library of Alexandria, and you have, although that one is more Greco, Africo, throw that one in. You have your places like Timbuktu is just have a very rich history that will make you stop thinking stupid things like that. But this gentleman creates his whole content around demeaning Africans intelligence. It took me a while to realize that he's actually a rage bait content creator, and he's very good at it because he has acquired a large number of followers. That is why. And then now when you come to Namibia, you have the Ministry of Information, Communication and Technology struggling with the ethical use of social media. Because just last year, we had a Miss Namibia social media issue. That's in the social sphere. So that means even when we fully adopt and implement technology in the field of governance, we are going to have a similar problem of either taking shortcuts or trying to take advantage of people's attention span. Last year in Australia, Deloitte had a problem. They had to refund the Australian government the Australian government contracted Deloitte to do a research on a specific subject. I totally forgot what subject that was. Well, it turns out they overused AI in that research. And then they provided the printed finalized report on that, on the research they were asked and paid for a behind load of money to do. A lot of research analysts went through that report and went like, this report doesn't make sense because it's referencing literature and books that are supposed to be written by people that did not write any such books. It's like the Namibian government, contracting tech, Omalite Technologies, to look at Namibia's driving patterns. Because we want to go beyond reflective jackets, reflective vests in preventing car accidents in Namibia. What's the best way to do that? to go around and gather this information in a painstaking traditional way.
Or
you could just throw it in ChatGPT and let it do the cooking. And then coming out, you know, that report comes out with a lot of faults. And one of those reports that was the Australian government is, you know, contracted Deloitte to, to compile was that the report came out indicating, for example, the Omalite technology, example that I used is that that report that Omalite technology is indicating that this piece of information that we, you know, that we wrote here, we got this information from it. We got this information from a book that was written by Helmut. And everyone starts going, Helmut never wrote a book. That's how they were caught. Long story short, Deloitte had to go back to the Australian government and said, we're sorry. And they actually had to refund about a certain percentage of the money that they were paid to compile that report. Welcome to technology. So if you are going to use AI in your, in your school stuff, for example, yeah, double check it. We're not saying don't use AI. We're just saying double check it. Now, we have problems, arising from the social application of technology. And there's also a lot of evidence coming out of the problems, arising out of the governance use of technology. Because the Australian government contracting Deloitte to compile a report on something that will help them make good governance decisions, that's the use of technology in governance, which Deloitte went like, well, we could just spend a lot of money doing this research, or we could just go straight to AI. And straight to AI they went, and now they, ended up refunding the money that they would have kept if they did their job right, but they didn't. Now, why does that sound familiar? You can just point out the fingers at Deloitte, but I can give you a million examples. I'll give you one. Remember Lion Air, Malaysia, and the Ethiopian airline that crashed in 2019? Those planes were both 737 MAX made by Boeing. They both crashed in a very similar way in a span of about 2 years apart. And the first one, when the one for Malaysia crashed, Boeing representatives blamed the pilots who, guy couldn't speak for himself because, he was incinerated in a plane. But when the Ethiopian one crashed, that's when air crash investigators went like, no, this is not a pilot problem. This is a tech fault. This is a manufacturing problem. And they found out that the angle of attack, that's what they call it at least, piece of software that they included in that plane, that helped them remove training program as part of the rollout of that plane to their customers. That shortcut led to the literal death of about 400 people. So by trying to cut cost, instead of introducing training programs, they decided to cut cost by basically putting in a piece of software. And that led to the death of a lot of people. To this day, a lot of family members in both those planes, I'm not sure about the Malaysia, but I'm sure about the Ethiopian one, the family members are still demanding compensation from Boeing. The family members of the victims of the Ethiopian airline that crashed. Yeah, you are looking at a pilot that went to school, spent years studying to be the best pilot they can, only for a multinational corporation to make a greedy mistake that claimed their life. Unfortunately, that's the situation we're dealing with here. So, in terms of governance, the application of technology is not the problem. The person that is applying the technology, which is more often us, it's going to be used to cut corners and maximize profit, as always. Now, when you cut corners and maximize profit, you end up with disasters like the Lion Air and the Ethiopian airline crashing. Again, in both cases, albeit it's more into the aviation industry, transport, more in transport, aviation, specifically aviation than governance, technology is misapplied. Intentionally. But before I continue, let's take a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back. And welcome back again. Now we go straight to the... WSIS. Going back to WSIS, we now look at some of the findings that was actually done in terms of during the assessment of that 20 years running that the program actually ran from 2005 to 2025. That's 20 years. Now, assessment on governance. The rise of national, it was pointed out that the rise of national, regional, sub-regional and youth internet governance forums, IGF initiatives in over 177 countries and regions demonstrate the growing capacity of communities to shape digital policy. You can host webinars. You can have diplomatic discussions on Zoom, Tenza. So, you can see that, young people that are participating in governance, in governance discussions, they are doing it more digitally. They are more like, why do I have to go there if I can just, turn on my computer and then just do it from here? As long as you have a decent internet connection, you're good. Now, one thing that was observed in education is that schools on internet governance have further strengthened capacity building with the support of the United Nations, and this is a UN-run program, obviously. So there will always be the old, school on the internet governance. So not only is it being taught, but there's also a lot of technological application that's being used in school on a daily basis. And leadership. Now, on a basic level, is the use of technology in leadership, in leadership. Yeah. And last year, SADC looked at the same thing. It was on Home Run when I was talking about, SADC considering, the use of AI in their day-to-day, legislative discussions and legislative, legislative duty executions. My only tiny problem is about 70% of the people that had this discussion can't put their own airtime in the room. But anyway, we move on to the challenges because I only have like 7 minutes. Some of the challenges observed is the rapid digital transformation. In a rapid digital transformation, is the serious challenges. The serious challenges like the spread of misinformation, disinformation, increasingly sophisticated cyber attacks, Hunters International, including AI generated deep fakes, among others. Was that last year or 2024? South Korea had to shut down a bunch of websites that were generating naked pictures and videos from people's fully clothed social media pictures. We are at that time where having your photo or a video on social media is not safe. Because they can just take it and feed it in some type of undressing software and there you are. What I'm saying is if you are going to make videos of, pictures of me that are AI generated, at least they give me some compliments downstairs. And sometimes my mouth just goes running. Digital opportunities and challenges are experienced differently. It was also pointed out, and it's also not rocket science. Digital opportunities and challenges are experienced differently by different countries, mostly influenced by varying internet access resources, governance models, and levels of digital literacy. And effective global governance must therefore be grounded in strong local and regional digital ecosystems that reflect diverse contexts. You know how the internet in every time, everywhere there is turns out an election or there's a protest, the internet goes off. We saw that with Iran and it happened in Nepal. We saw that in Uganda. It turns out, as in every tool developed by mankind, the tool is not the problem. It's the user. Again, we are back to square one. It's the human being. That's the problem. You and me. Sometimes I forget to do that, believe it or not. Actually, it's not that hard to believe if you're a regular listener. So, what we have here is, let's draw a structure. The internet is made up of different platforms. And most of these platforms are privately owned businesses. Because they are privately owned businesses, and again, because they are world businesses, making money is their primary focus. Because of that, they have to build these platforms in a way that they are engaging to the point where, in case of social media, it has been described as a little too engaging to the point where it's been described as addictive. Now, in a sense of governance, for example, how do you prevent problems like that seems to be coming out of the social application of technology into governance? Because once you get to governance, it's a serious problem. And it, again, not surprising, it all circled to one thing that no one was actually shocked to find out that it was going to lead there. And what is that? Legislations. Regulating, the internet is an information superhighway. So more information can be shared more instantly over the internet than we have ever actually, you know, than we have, than any civilization that we can, you know, well on record. Except now that comes with a lot of misinformation. That comes with a lot of disinformation. So it's much easier to, you know, the fact that it's much easier to exchange information, the fact that it's much easier to exchange information, also means it's much, you know, well, that information is then becomes a very crude concept. Like, you can share good information and, or you can also share, well, misinformation. And before you start thinking that misinformation is only on social media, let me remind you, the whole Venezuela thing will tell a whole different story. Weapons of mass destruction in 2003 that led to the invasion of Iraq, that was misinformation on a governmental level, on a mainstream level. The president of Venezuela being head of a cartel de la sol, de la soles, or the cartel of the suns, also points out to call it a, because they have not proven it. They have been claiming that the government of Venezuela have been, you know, the president of Venezuela have been running that imaginary cartel at this point, safe to say, because they have not provided any proof. Again, misinformation, industrial scale.
At ShopRite, our low price promise is to always help you save when you need it most. Make every dollar count this January and save big on deals like 500 grams Polana elbow, macaroni or spaghetti pasta, only 13 Namibian dollars 99 each. And 1 kg nice rice, medium grain for just 26 Namibian dollars 99. Don't miss out. Visit your nearest ShopRite and save more this January. Offers valid until 25 January 2026. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust. Always.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
So, there's just one problem when it comes to regulating. Last year, the Nigerian government actually went through that dilemma. I don't know how that ended, but it was a very nice story that I followed when Meta was threatening to, you know, to get out of Nigeria. Every time that a country changes its legislation in a way that it reflects, it comes off to a lot of platforms as a threat to their interest, they threaten to withdraw. And when Meta was threatening to withdraw out of Nigeria, a very giant market compared to Namibia. What was one of the biggest issue that the Nigerian government had actually to consider? That there are a lot of Nigerians that make a business out of these platforms. So if they are going to withdraw, then the government will have to figure out, they have to come up with contingency plans on how to deal with the fallout. We call it an employment fallout that comes out of it. Unemployment fallout. So, I know if I was a law, if I was a lawmaker, that would be a dilemma. So do I ban this guy or do, you know, and leave a lot of, unemployed, you know, a lot of people unemployed that will blame me, or do I just leave them to go rampant with their misbehavior because I don't want to deal with the blame of unemployment if they withdrew? Also, put in mind, I think that was back in 2019 when the government of Gambia had somewhat the same conundrum with the sex tourism that the Gambia has been known for a very long time. Jamaica is slowly taking a cake on that one, but now the government of the Gambia realized that a lot of elderly, mostly women, were flying to, retirees were flying to their country to engage in bedroom activities with mostly young people in their country. Which, now the country was now raping up a lot of very bad PR. As a result, they now set in their, you know, central government discussions and started going, how do we deal with this problem? Do we ban this type of tourists? Do you have any idea how difficult it is to ban that type of tourism? First of all, if someone shows up at the airport and you ask them, what are you coming to our country for? Do you really think they're going to tell you that I'm here to get laid? No! They'll tell you I'm here to absorb the panoramic, beautiful mountain range of your country. They're talking about a different mountain range. But speaking of, now I have to go. 4 minutes into the time of business and economic segment. So the long story short, the government of the Gambia had to choose between, they were caught between a rock and a hard place. They implement some crackdown on that form of tourism is going to impact their tourism because that's one of their main sources of revenue. I think they just said, well, you're gonna let the boys have fun. And, the boys have fun. We save our tourism industry. Everyone is happy. The painful part is one guy was interviewed and he actually mentioned that he was married and he has no way of taking care of his family. He has to engage in that. Lord, may I not find myself in that situation. Thank you. Hey, honey, how was work? Oh, boy, am I tired. Yeah. Whew. Oh, she was from Switzerland. She was old, but boy, active. Okay, now I have to go. Until tomorrow, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station. There are challenges. There are challenges that will come with every adoption of technology. Talking about how to implement it in a ways that are safe, not just socially but also legislatively, is important. And we are having this discussion on a United Nations level. So tomorrow we have a more local discussion. And then Friday we, just go international again. Boy, do I love my job. Until tomorrow, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM, from yours truly here. Helmut, y'all stay blessed. Drive safe. Don't drink and drive. And, guys, every time I read an article about an abusive relationship, I ask myself one question. What's wrong with living? Because I think that some of these problems comes from, there are problems of progression. It starts with insult and then yelling and then a slap and then a punch, then straight a panga and shotgun. So thank heavens I have not been in a situation like that. And this is not to make a mockery of people that find themselves in that situation, but please talk to someone and have a good evening.